Welcome to Therapist Off Script, a podcast designed with therapist in mind as we discuss all things psychotherapy practice, the good, the bad, and the truly mind-blowing adventures of being a therapist in process. Hang on as we dive deep, join together, and empower others for the journey of a lifetime. So this week's episode is our part two to finding your ideal supervisor match from the supervisee perspective on the journey to becoming a licensed mental health therapist. Okay, can I ask you some questions?
Sure.
From the supervisee position?
Mm-hmm.
There's two parts. One is, what questions should you ask the supervisor? The second part is, coming from the framework or the lens of the supervisee, I guess they're the same questions, right?
Welcome to Therapist Off Script. We are two therapists, Jen and
Alex, in the mental health and wellness space, coming together from different points in our profession
to unlock the world of healing arts and all that it holds of being a psychotherapist in practice.
Regardless of where we are in the process.
While we are therapists, this podcast is not meant to be therapy or supervision. Should we mention clients, we are committed to safeguarding our client confidentiality.
Please know that information presented here is intentionally de-identified, with details changed and are often a representation of common challenges we've witnessed within the struggles of life and simply being a human.
Come spend time with us as we show up as unapologetically us. We are Therapist Off Script.
Let's say already onboarded, meeting supervisor. I like to know if they have a specific way of writing notes, since, you know, supervisors have to co-sign on our notes. Same thing with like treatment plans and diagnoses, just like all the paperwork and the nitty-gritty stuff. Some supervisors come from the Medi-Cal world, even if you're not actually using Medi-Cal, but because that's how they were trained, that's, you know, what they're going to probably train you on. If they have a particular style or modality, are we allowed to use whatever modality we want or whatever we feel comfortable with? So, and yeah, what's your philosophy or method as far as supervision, which you covered in the last episode? But I would ask that directly. Are videos required, like to, you know, show a certain portion of your sessions? And so then you have to get them recorded, which means you have to get that permission. And so if that's required, then you have to obviously like be aware of the barriers that come with that. If the clients even say no. And if it's not required, you know, pros and cons, direct feedback. I don't know, for me personally, I like that because that's how I'm going to learn and improve. But some supervisees don't like that, and they get it, and then the rupture of the therapeutic relationship and supervisor-supervisee relationship kind of operate the same way. So if there's a rupture there, that can affect training both sides of that relationship. Or if I like direct feedback and I'm not getting it, same thing. I usually just directly ask because that's how I am as a person.
And that's my preference too. They were working from the same list questions to ask.
Well, that's why we're doing this. We're just always on the same wavelength.
I know. Are you open to feedback? And there's a difference between constructive feedback and toxic feedback.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And beyond asking, are you open to feedback?
Is it constructive and growth producing?
What does that look like?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so getting real life examples so that you can like kind of assess if it's going to be constructive in nature to you. Mm-hmm. And if they're also open to the constructive feedback. Receiving, is it going to be toxic feedback where it belittles you and goes back to my job? I heard the supervisor say is to make people cry, and it was not positive in intent.
So that's going to be more of a toxic. And that's where we kind of carry that weight or those like rocks in our bags from our supervisors that have been along our path that weigh us down so much to the effect that some don't make it through licensure because they're belittled and, you know, like toxic environment. So that's not good.
Yeah.
There's some supervisors who should not be supervisors. Another thing you said is like progress note style. I interviewed someone today. And one of the person's questions was, what is your preference in the progress notes style? Mm. And of course, my preference is GURP. So goals, intervention, response, plan, along with the golden thread, right? So it ties everything together from
assessment, diagnosis, and treatment.
That's from the setting that I was interviewing in my nonprofit. That's going to be more of a medical mindset, which is what you were talking about earlier, versus the holistic, not mindset, but I guess it is a mindset, medical model, holistic model, and then somewhere in between. Progress note style makes a difference because if your preference is to write SOAP notes or DAP notes and the supervisor's preference is GURP notes or some other form of notes, that could be conflicting, and it comes back to almost like a clash of values.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, right? And medical model is going to take on a different form of writing notes than more of a holistic model. Like, are you going to be exposed to the scrutiny of an audit, or do you do full private pay, or the client self pays for their therapy? There's going to be differences. If you are in, and this comes from my own experience, so it doesn't mean by any means that it's everybody's experience, but if you come from more of like a community mental health, my experience with working within one of the contracts is they expect, for example, in the state of California, they have a problem list versus the requirement of a treatment plan. Mm. If you ever plan to get, like, if you want to stay in community mental health, all the power to you, that aligns with your values, great. Do their training and everything, but there's something beyond or something different, not so much beyond, where you might need to know how to do a treatment plan. And especially if you're testing for your clinical, that's part of your therapist skill set is being able to write a treatment plan. But that's not something that's being trained, at least in my experiences. Doesn't mean it's actually not being done. It's just in my, you know, level of experience. So, mm-hmm. Asking the person what led them to the mental health field. Mm-hmm. I interviewed mm-hmm. someone earlier this week, or was the end of last week? I've lost track. And they wanted to know how long I've been licensed, how long I've been supervising. And those were both really good questions. And what led
me, especially the license, because you mm-hmm. want to, and also if your license is still active, but you don't want to get into a situation where you've got this job, new supervisor, great supervisor, yada, 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 get all your hours. And then you don't realize that their license lapsed and you don't get to count those. So,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's very important that at the onset of supervision, you look through the BVS breeze and make sure that the person who's going to be supervising you, their license is current and active. And then look at their expiration date, and you're checking upon that date or a month before, 3 months before, to see that they've renewed their license. Because if it goes inactive, you don't get to count those hours, like you said.
Right. If they're good for a while and then their license lapse, you do at least get to count the hours for while their license was active, right?
While their license was active, yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And then, like, let's say they're 3 months behind, then it's just those 3 months of hours that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had a supervisee on the flip side. I had a supervisee who now I check every month. I have my administrative assistant check their registrations every single month. But this person wasn't currently seeing clients. They were like taking some time away. But their supervision, or sorry, the supervision, their registration expired and they didn't renew it because they were confused. And so they had a good 3 months of not an active registration. Well, they weren't seeing clients during the time, so it was okay, but they had to go ahead and renew it, which was fine. But of course there was no hours being claimed during that time anyway.
Right.
So,
which is good.
Mm-hmm. So it's always good to know that you need to renew your registration on a yearly basis and to know your expiration date. Asking what led them into the mental health, to go to back to that one, can shine a light on their pursuit within the mental health field, their passions. So you can kind of like values, attitudes, beliefs, all of that. So just through that one question, you can kind of assess if it's a match, you know, with the mission and vision.
Yeah.
What kind of clients do you work best with? Right? They're asking you that question.
Yeah.
Don't be afraid to ask that question back. It doesn't have to be right after, right? Or it could be as an extension of the conversation to naturally weave in the questions. But the questions they're asking you, a lot of them, you could reflect back and ask them. So in essence, they're interviewing you, but you're interviewing them also.
Right. And that leads me into like individual versus group supervision. So my thought was like, yeah, whatever their specialty is, then I'm going to go to them first. Obviously, my supervisor is the one that's signing off my hours. Technically, my clients are their clients. Mm-hmm. So they should be in the loop about everything. But let's say I have a different group supervisor. You know, my individual supervisor has expertise in ABC and my group supervisor has an expertise in XYZ. I'm going to go to my individual supervisor first for ABC and then maybe use, you know, XYZ for the consult in group consultation. That way I get also perspectives from, of course, my other associates, literally. And so that's kind of like, I don't know. I like the idea of having a different individual supervisor and a group supervisor. That's not always the case. Sometimes it is like the individual supervisor happens to also be running the group.
Mm-hmm.
There's pros and cons. Less paperwork if the individual supervisor is also doing group, mm-hmm. but less like access to other perspectives.
Right. And as you're like getting to know like your own grounding within it, your own style, your own techniques, your own preferences, it's good to tap into multiple mentors, supervisors, because it's only going to like broaden and strengthen your own. Right. And if you're just going to one person all the time, if that person's like phenomenal, then yay. Right. But not any one person is good at all the things.
Right.
And so having multiple people and even doing, if you don't have more than one supervisor, having consults and being a part of like networking groups and like, mm-hmm. I know like different law and ethics bodies have like consult groups, even Facebook groups, like of course, confidentiality, de-identifying your client information, right? Instead of saying, you know, I have little Bobby, I don't know why I say little, but I have little Bobby, let's say he's 4 years old. His parents are XYZ, blah, 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 blah. What would you do for that? No, it's what would you do for a client who is in early childhood who presents with XYZ, right? Yeah. There's a difference with de-identifying. And so, but being able to, if you only have one supervisor, connecting to consult groups to be able to pick brains and grow within that is great. Yeah.
Because I think that's extremely important, really throughout the career, but especially while developing through associatehood.
Oh, we're going to be so hung up on that word. Yeah, because when you're a beginner, you have like more of the high structure, you're acquiring skills, building your toolbox. You're open to a plethora of feedback and it's two ways, right? Mm-hmm. Your supervisor may have higher involvement and oversight because like you said, your clients are their clients. That supervisee may be more dependent on their supervisor. This is also a time where imposter syndrome, another podcast topic, is at its height, right? Like who am I for people to come to for help? But you forget, like you've done all your schooling, you have life experiences, you know, you mm-hmm. are where you are for a reason. Supervisor also would like highlight key insights and ideas, be able to expand the thought processes. That's a beginner. Then you go into more like you're about, let's see, maybe a year in. So associate 1 year in. So you're about halfway through your hours. If you're on track to finish in the 2 years or 3,000 hours, 104 weeks, right? Some people, they transition over to like more of a plateau. They're like, okay, like that limbo in between. It's like, okay, I'm just getting over the hill of 1500 hours. You know, some people hit the gas pedal where others like start to slow down, right? So you got to find your pace. You're becoming more autonomous. You're blossoming into a therapist. You've got some tools under in your toolbox now. You're feeling more effective. You're seeing the progress of your clients or maybe the decline, but then you're course correction, right? So you're adapting the treatment plan, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you're functioning more independently And you know that, yes, your supervisor is not as involved, but you know when to reach out for help.
Right.
Right. That's the difference. And you have that awareness of key factors that require you to reach out. So anything with like law and ethics, make sure all your checks are done. Right. Then you get in, you're getting ready to like sit for licensure. So you're more in like that, the 2-year mark, right? Your hours have been turned in. Yay. Something to really look forward to. You're now knee deep. Is that the correct for you? Now knee deep, nose deep. Nose in the books. I don't know what to say.
Depending on your perspective.
Yeah. So I just covered them all. X, Y, Z, A, B, C. You are studying for your clinical. You have more of confidence. Overall, you're feeling kind of stable. Doubts may be present, but you're able to stay grounded and actually do the work. Right. You still have your safety net of your supervisor, but they're definitely less involved as you became even more autonomous. You might even have your peer consults. You're able to zoom in to pertinent clinical areas and be able to like have that insight. You might even hear your supervisor's voice in your head, right? You're like, use the self as therapist tools in session. You use yourself as a therapist tool or a therapeutic tool in session. And your identity as a therapist becomes more balanced.
Yeah.
Right. So there's different stages that happen. So what's another question that you would ask a potential supervisor?
Yeah. So style, notes, theories or modalities they typically use or expertise, clients. Resources. I'm a huge fan of resources. I'm going to ask, borrow, steal, etc. from everybody I possibly can. But what better person to start with than a supervisor who has accumulated all sorts of things throughout the years? Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously associates, especially if they come from different traineeships or different programs, are going to have their own resources, but I'm going to get everything one way or another.
Right.
Which reminds me, I need to organize my files so that I can be the go-to person, but that's future Alex's problem.
I'm like a data nerd, like a squirrel, and I accumulate all my data nuts and then I like store them away on all these platforms. Like all my like Pinterest boards, yes. Dropbox is like completely at capacity, like not even. But I'm able to like, when I have it organized, be able to type in a keyword and it all populates. And like I shared, I think the first episode, it was like, I used to carry this big black container onto the school site with me and it was all organized there, but now it's all virtual. So I can take my iPad with me and just like type in a keyword and boom, there it is. And I love that so much. I'm such a data nerd. So.
Yeah, I'm working on it. I mean, I am. I just have to organize everything. I remember during my traineeship, it was during group supervision. There was this girl, I mean, I'm friends with her. Hi, Tara. And so every time anybody asked for a resource or like mentioned something, she was already typing on her computer. Oh, I have resources for this. Let me just email them to everybody. Like, how the hell do you do that so fast? I actually still don't know, which reminds
me. Admirable skill.
Yeah. So I was kind of like, I want to be her. I want to be the Tara of all future groups. Yeah. Yeah.
What is the availability of supervision? Like, how accessible are you? If we're outside of individual or group, how do I contact you? What's your availability within that? How do you stay up to date in the mental health field? Right? Because if someone's still working from the 50s, just calling out a random number or random year, then their therapeutic skills and techniques may not be up to date. We're supposed to invest in continuing education in order to renew our license, right? Mm-hmm. But if they spent all of their continuing education on how to data mine, I don't know, we were just talking about data mining,
right.
Then that is not necessarily going to translate over to like acceptance and commitment therapy, which is like coming more known, right. DBT, dialectical behavioral therapy. Like, and especially if it's not an area that you're especially interested in, it might be worth learning, but you might get very bored very quickly.
Yeah.
If you're not naturally drawn to it. How will I be evaluated? We talked about constructive feedback earlier. What does that look like? I give a supervisee informed consent at the onset of supervision. And it lays out everything from.
Yeah, that's something that not everybody does. I think you're the only one that I know of.
Have you seen mine?
Yeah.
I think I shared it with you. Yeah. Mine talks about, like, similar to like a client informed consent. It talks about risk and benefits. It talks about the frequency and duration of supervision, like what that looks like, the type of supervision I offer, my philosophy. It even gives like my academic background and information about me, what theoretical orientations I come from. I even put in like the purpose, the goals, and the objectives of supervision, like where I'm coming from.
What sounds like you're treating, I mean, again, it just aligns with like treating the supervisor-supervisee relationship with therapy-therapist relationship. One thing that I do want to point out, though, I forgot, is boundaries. So the thing is, like, yeah, like the supervisor-supervisee relationship is not therapy. So there's a line between, you know, is this a personal therapy session or are we just processing countertransference? That I think we can do a whole other topic on, and we should. But that's something to also be mindful of. So, yeah.
Right. I'm glad you said that, because the supervisor like serves in different roles. So they could be a teacher, a consultant, an evaluator, a guide, a gatekeeper, and what you were just touching on is a counselor. So they're not providing personal therapy to you and digging into your childhood. No, they're more of how is that showing up for you? What's happening inside when the client is saying that? Is there counter transference happening? Is there resentment showing up? You know, like those kind of things, like the person of the therapist, like looking inward and seeing how it shows up in the therapy room, right?
Yeah.
So I in my supervising informed consent, it talks about what to expect in supervision, the expectations and roles and responsibilities of the supervisee and supervisor, the rights of both, similar to like, I can terminate. Here's the timeline for me to terminate, especially if I see that your professional judgment is impacting your clients. Does that look like? It's setting the expectations and then what the results are going to be if those, if those things are broken. It mimics almost like a client informed consent.
Yeah.
So I like it because I want to be as transparent as possible and give a good like foundation, like starting point.
And that's something that I'm super huge on too. I mean, it just like communication in general. I like communication, whether it's feedback or how to do something or just contact information. The more information I have for what to expect, the easier or smoother the process is going to be. And, you know, the more clear that language is on both ends, but especially the supervisor. Otherwise, if I'm just like going off of vague information here, I'm not going to feel as supported, which, you know, obviously throughout the path, I'm going to need more or less support depending on where I'm at, but that support should still feel like it's there. And that's typically in the form of communication, clear communication.
Clear and transparent.
Yep.
Same, right? Is there any, like, I know I ended on the first episode. I was like, any last words? You're like, any last words? Well, you're terminated.
Right.
Any final words you want to share? Words of wisdom or insights?
Yeah, I think just really lean into the process. If you have a supervisor that you really like or that you found as a good supervisor-supervisee match, really lean into that. Learn as much as you possibly can, really from as many people as possible, but because you have that direct relationship with a professional in the mental health field that's setting you up for your career or is a huge part of your journey, lean into it. And if you don't have that solid, you know, feel good supervisor supervisee match, see what you can do to change that, because yeah, supervisor supervisee relationships can really make or break somebody's experience or even career.
Right.
Don't let that be you.
Yeah, absolutely. And the person that you choose to be your supervisor and the supervisor that chooses to have you as a supervisee, you're connected. Like, I was licensed 5 years in and I'm contacting my supervisor to have the person sign my, I was doing multi-state licensure and I needed my supervisor to sign that. So don't burn your bridges.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Like, yeah. So it's good. So choose wisely.
Join us next time as we cover burnout and the ins and outs.
Sounds good.
If you'd like to hear more, please do not forget to like and subscribe on your favorite platform.
You can learn more about us at therapistsoffscript.com or by visiting us on Instagram at therapistsoffscript.
We welcome connections, comments, and feedback.
Or to simply say hi.
By engaging with us on Instagram or through our website.
Thanks for spending time with us today, where we dive deep, join together, and empower others. We are Therapists Off Script.
Be sure to check out our show notes for links and resources shared within this episode.
Right.
Oh, we're going to be so hung up on that word.